Why don't we come to order for the initial part of the meeting, and hopefully we'll have some legal representation someplace along the line. Is staff prepared?
Good morning, Mike Revenar with Planning. Craig is has a conflict with a meeting downtown and the Board of County Commissioners, so I will fill in for the report items. Can you see the overhead on your screen? Can I have the overhead, please? We'll start off with the building permits. I don't think this was in your packet.
It is.
Yes, now we can.
You can see El Paso County had 30.8% of the building permits, 55.7% fell within the city of Colorado Springs. These are residential building permits. It is down year to date over last year by 114 permits. Move on to the, I doubt you'll be able to see this, move on to the workload. We have, currently have 87 projects under review. 73 of those are with the applicants pending resubmittal. As of September 30th, we had, as of the end of September, we had 30 type C&D projects, 261 for the year so far, 143 early assistance meetings so far this year. It's my understanding that there will be two new Planning Commission members starting on October 17th, and they are Jane Dillon and Sharon Friedman.
Thank you. That would be great.
Go to the Board of County Commissioners action report. I believe this is in your packet. The final plat for Sterling Ranch was continued. It's my understanding that was continued for drainage, to resolve drainage issues. The final plat for Carriage Meadows South was approved by the board. The annexation of Cumberland Green Northeast Edition, that's within the city of Fountain, was approved. The Meadowbrook Crossing Filing 1 plat was approved. The Forest Lakes final plat was also approved by the board, and the PPRTA vacation replat up by Hay Creek Road was also approved by the board. You have one project-related consent item today, item 2B, which is a final plat, Hannah Ridge at Feathergrass filing number 3. Has 16 conditions and one notation. The approval standard resolution is on page 19. The denial is on page 20. There is water sufficiency. Three adjoining property owners were notified, and there was one response received, and that response was in favor. No response in opposition. I believe I blasted through that, so.
Well, thank you. Anybody have questions for staff? In that case, has everyone had a chance to review the minutes? Any corrections or changes needed? If not, the minutes will be considered approved as presented. And with that, we can go ahead with the, let's see. Does any of the commissioners wish to hear the consent item SF17-012? Is there any interest in the audience to hear the consent item? Hearing not, I'll entertain a motion. Okay. Yes, Mr. Curry.
Mr. Chair, as regards item number 2B, file number SF-17-012, final plat for Hannah Ridge at Feathergrass, filing number 3, I move for approval in accordance with the standard resolution on page 19, with 16 conditions and one notation, and with a finding of sufficiency for quantity, quality, and dependability of water.
Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Rainey, second. Mm-hmm. All right. Any discussion from the commissioners? Any discussion from the floor? If not, I'll call the roll for a vote.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Before you do, just as a quick admin note, did you want to identify the voting members for today for the record?
Yes, I will. Thank you very much. Ms. Rainey, Mr. Curry, Mr. Smith, and Mr. Wood. I'm told that Mr. Risley will be here shortly, but he had a conflict this morning. And so with that, the voting members, Ms. Rainey?
Aye.
Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. And so SF-17-012 is approved as presented. With that, we'll go on to the next item. Before we start, Mr. Maston is here and will be a voting member. Welcome.
Are we going to read the item into the record?
Beg your pardon?
Reading the item into the record.
You want me to do that?
Yes.
Okay. I'll be happy to do that. Item 3, ID 17-004, Special District Service Plan, Peterson Gateway Metropolitan District, with 6 conditions, 1 notation, and approval page 37 or denial page 38.
All right. Good morning, Planning Commission, Mr. Chair, Ramir Fitzpatrick with Planning and Community Development. Just want to go over a few brief things before I turn the floor over to the applicant and consultant. This is a request for approval of a Title 32 service plan in the formation of the Peterson Gateway Metropolitan District. The property owner is Space Village Retail LLC with consultants from Spencer Fain LLP. Included in your staff report are standard attachments. The special district staff report or service plan staff report is not like any other staff report that you typically see. It's a standardized template that follows some of the requirements of the board's adopted special district policies, which have also been attached to your report. Before I begin, I just want to go through the approval criteria. There are certain required findings in accordance with state statute that there's sufficient existing and projected need for the district. Existing service is inadequate for present and projected needs. The district is capable of providing economical and sufficient service, and the district has financial ability to discharge the proposed indebtedness. And then there are discretionary findings, and some of these may seem duplicative or redundant, but they have some slightly different nuances. Adequate service is not or will not be available through other sources, that their facilities and service standards are compatible with other surrounding districts, compliance with the master plan and compliance with water quality management plan, and that the formation of the district is in the best interest of the area to be served. So with that, I'd like to introduce Mr. Danny Mienka and his representatives to provide you an overview of the proposed service plan.
Yes, Mr. Mienka, have you signed in?
I'm going to do that right now.
That would be fantastic.
Thank you.
Sign in and state your name for the record.
I'm Danny Mienka with the Equity Group, and here in front of you this morning on behalf of Space Village Retail, LLC, which is a related entity, and I appreciate your time on this item this morning. So by way of a little bit of background, our family, since the early 1980s, has developed real property outside Peterson Air Force Base and have a unique perspective into this rather important gateway and second largest employer in our community. We've developed motel, apartments, convenience store, and retail, and have always recognized the inadequate resources within Colorado Department of Transportation for purposes of maintaining the right-of-ways and have struggled to see Peterson be able to budget monies for their entrance. And so at this point, our company has real property outside all three gates of Peterson. We understand the importance of this employer, and most recently, we've contracted to bring in Come and Go into the front of our retail center outside the North Gate. And in working with Come and Go, we proposed to stand up Peterson Gateway Metropolitan District. And the purpose of this district is to be the mechanism from which we would channel public improvement fees that would be applied to purchases within our shopping center, and those revenue streams would then be used to make improvements to Peterson's North Gate. We've met with Peterson Air Force Base. They're very excited about this idea, recognize that they don't have a funding mechanism. There's a lack of irrigation but for resources coming to the forefront. And so we're encouraged that with a successful convenience store operation and our existing retail tenancies, that we will over time be able to phase in some pretty significant improvements to this gateway and entrance to Peterson. So I'd like to take you through just a couple of slides. They're very preliminary, but for purposes of illustrating our plan, I'd like to take you through some of our preliminary concepts.
Just okay.
So Ramiro will bring this back up, and we'll just us.
Like the remote control at home, I'm only allowed to touch certain ones.
Me too.
We're having a little trouble here with the IT system.
You got it on a slideshow.
That's okay. This is better than pilot air because we have somebody who can stick them into the cockpit and help us out.
Okay, so the first slide that you have in front of you sort of shows the limit of our project, and we're looking at an elevated highway 24 in Peterson intersection. There's two off ramps. The first one to the west delivers most of the ingress traffic to Peterson Air Force Base, and then there's a second off ramp that drops off right in front of the Loaf and Jug there. And so we propose initially to treat the south side, but ultimately if the revenue source is there, if we can get other folks on the other north side of the highway to join in, we would propose to treat the north side of the right-of-way areas around 24. This is one concept where we would take and bring irrigation to the right-of-way either side of Peterson, south of 24, probably start in a phased manner with the medians that are just on the south side of Space Village and the off-ramp, and then move towards the actual embankment of the highway. Here we're raising planting beds and bringing in species that are inviting, colorful, and complementary to this base that has really wonderful architecture in and of itself. Here's another thought. This is a little bit gutsy on my planner's part to put the stars and stripes there. I think that is not going to make the cut, but it's another way we could stagger without walls various landscaping treatment along that south side of 24. This one, again, we sort of bring in some language with the design of these walls to be complementary to Peterson and some of its design elements within its buildings. And so this is the long-term goal, the impetus for this district, and we would appreciate your favorable consideration of the approval of our service plan. Happy to answer any questions.
I had one question. I noticed something that I hadn't remembered seeing before, and that was not only eminent domain, but what was the term? Dominant eminent domain. And I was wondering what that was all about.
I'll allow my attorney to most accurately respond to that question.
Okay.
Morning, Commissioners. My name is Pat Herbacek from Spencer Fane. The whole concept of eminent domain and dominant eminent domain is really just to cover those instances where we needed to get property that was privately owned and we needed it for the project. We don't necessarily see it as a big need here, but it's sometimes nice to have in there to sort of address unanticipated things that come up depending on the needs of the project going forward.
Well, that's the whole subject of eminent domain, right?
Right.
What is a dominant eminent domain? Does that mean that you can resolve any conflicting eminent domains?
It's just another version of the same concept, to be honest. So it has to do with on the legal side, the nature of who has the sort of peremptory right on that side, and it would just give the district that peremptory right over a private owner.
Okay. All right. Any legal advice or instruction on this?
I wish I had some right off the bat. Unfortunately, it's escaping me. So I apologize. I will try to my concern is, and perhaps if you wouldn't mind answering this question, I haven't dealt with dominant eminent domain in a long time. So I apologize for my unfamiliarity with the subject today. Does dominant eminent domain, in your opinion, give you the ability to take an eminent domain action against another public entity? In other words, could you condemn county property or city property or state property?
Good morning, Commissioners. Russ Dykstra from Spencer Fane. I've actually had some very recent experiences with dominant eminent domain. In the world of special districts and governmental entities in particular, what it would allow is a district to go ahead, say there was a water district easement that ran across where we were going to try to do some planting areas. And if there was a clash between those two entities, it would allow the one with dominant eminent domain to condemn that easement interest from the other district. It's a very unique, and I apologize that language is in here. Quite frankly, the statute gives every special district, especially water districts and the county, dominant eminent domain. To my knowledge, it's never been challenged in the state of Colorado in the courts as far as if two entities with dominant eminent domain come together, who wins. To my knowledge, that has never been a situation that's been addressed by the court, so it's not clear who would win.
With the respect of conflicts with public entities, would you have claim dominant eminent domain over a county or a state?
Yeah, over state right-of-way, that would be an issue. So in this instance in particular, if, for example, we needed 3 feet of CDOT right-of-way to put in a landscaping irrigation or to get an easement is more the likely case, then yes, there would be a case for the dominant eminent domain to claim that easement.
Okay. Does the county have the authority to grant that?
I believe he stated that it's in the special district statute. Is that correct?
Correct, it is.
Okay, so we would basically be just taking that authority from the statute?
Correct.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think I can add to the discussion. I had similar concerns about the eminent domain provisions, so I looked them up, and I brought with me parts of Title 32 that discuss it all. Couple of points here: that eminent domain by a special district is allowed in the statute, but it's only usable, it's specific, and this is a quote, only for purposes of fire protection, sanitation, street improvements, television relay and translator facilities, water, or water and sanitation, except for the acquisition of water rights. So that's limited to those powers. And the term, and quoting again from the document, the term dominant eminent domain under Title 32, Section 9-103, Paragraph 6, means that the power of eminent domain is superior to that of other specific governmental subdivisions of the state, but not the state itself. So the dominance, I'm not away from the quote now, the dominancy specifies a priority over other entities, but it does not give them eminent domain over state interests.
Okay.
So
is that consistent with your understanding? I'm seeing heads nod.
For the record, yes, Mr. Chair, that is consistent.
Thank you very much.
And then, Mr. Chair, I have some questions and concerns as well.
Yes, Mr. Curry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of these are going to be for the attorney, and some of these I think are going to be for the applicant. Specifically for the attorney and potentially for the applicant as well, I am struggling to find out whether or not this actually meets the criteria for a metropolitan district at all, because the statute requires that metropolitan districts provide at least two of several services. And it appears you guys are providing only one of those services. And to wit, quoting from the title, metropolitan district means a special district that provides for the inhabitants thereof and provides two or more of the following services: fire protection, which you're not providing, mosquito control, which you're not providing, parks and recreation, which you're not providing, safety protection, which you're not providing, sanitation, which you're not providing, solid waste disposal facilities or collection of waste, which you're not providing, street improvements, which you arguably are, television relay and translation, which you're not, transportation, which you're not, and water, which you're also not. So I only see one of those in there. Does this meet the criteria, since they're only providing one service for a metropolitan district? I don't know whether it's for the attorney or your attorneys or the applicant, whoever can shed the light.
Well, I'll take the first attorney who steps up.
I win. Russ Dykstra again, for the record. That is a very good question. In a limited service district like this, where it's a very finely tuned approach that the district is being utilized for, our analysis is, and this is generally adopted in other jurisdictions, that we're doing street and safety improvements, as well as some internal landscaping and landscaping in general and signage, which there is no bright, fine definition of what exactly that means, but in our general experience over doing this for 30, 40 years in our firm, is that most jurisdictions consider that to be park and recreation when you get into landscaping and signage and that type of thing that aren't dedicated state highway standard signage type things.
Yeah, but with respect, landscaping is included in the transportation definition in the title, not parks and recreation.
So
that's why I said transportation piece, the landscape, I said arguably, and the reason I said that is because it's the landscaping, not the street improvements. The landscaping is explicitly included in those definitions, not the parks and recreation. So again, I struggle, where's the second service?
And I agree with you exactly on that. The landscaping that was shown in the slides is specific to the right-of-way landscaping, and that's where the transportation part of it is. And that's why I referenced some of the internal landscaping that's going to be done along the streetscapes and further in along the development signage as well.
Yeah, the only problem with that is that the internal ones are arguably at least not public improvements. They go to the retail space, which is more of the primary intent of what this is doing. And Board of County Commissioners Policy 02272 says, and I quote, districts shall not be authorized to finance non-public improvements. And so things that are internal are for the retail space, not for public improvements.
If I could just quickly clarify that.
But please, I don't mean to.
No, at all. Yeah. Public improvements, you are exactly 100% correct, and that's a large majority of our job is to make sure that statutorily a district can only provide public improvements, period. And so any improvements internally or any improvements, period, we either have to have them in a governmentally owned right-of-way or in areas that are owned in fee or that the district has easements for, and that will be the case. Any improvements that the district pays for, period, have to be in a publicly owned in fee or in an easement interest, and that will be the case.
Okay, the only challenge is a letter of intent says that the district will help create, and I quote, 20,310 square feet of commercial space. I don't see how creating a retail commercial space is a public improvement.
And that's probably a misnomer in the usage of creating. It's more in support of and enhancing that area with public surrounding public areas that enhance that business climate.
Part of the challenge is that there are numerous other references in the package that indicate that the primary intent of this is to improve the retail space in Space Village Retail, mm-hmm. which I don't think anybody would argue may need that. But what I'm struggling with is we're talking about what the law calls a quasi-municipal entity. And what I see here is something that again, the county policies talk about discouraging, it says, and I quote, the policy of the county is generally discourage the use of districts as a mechanism to reimburse developers for the cost of facilities or other costs already committed to a land development project. And that's where I'm struggling with, because I think that's exactly what this is. And again, I'm not even sure that it legally meets the definition, since there's only one public service here, which is the landscaping along the roads. And the rest of it seems bent on doing the commercial part, and that's underscored by the LOI. So I really need some help being convinced that this is actually a public improvement, not something just to increase the retail space and the viability of the come and go and the other one there.
Okay. Thank you, and I appreciate your wanting to get this right. So what we've brought to you today is sort of
the initial phase of what we would do with this district, which is to immediately try to address the environment around this entrance. But it, quite frankly, is contemplated in our mind to have the ability to grow into helping both support Peterson Air Force Base's softball fields, which they're going to relocate directly west and across the street from our retail center. That was brought to our attention from planning yesterday at Peterson Air Force Base. That is City of Colorado Springs property. Likewise, the real property that Colorado Springs owns and bought to protect the runway expansion years ago that's along Space Village to the east of this location could very well be the next soccer and ball field open space. This would be the vehicle that we would use. We would need additional revenue streams, you know, from just this retail center, but the intent would be to be able to expand this to a full-blown park and rec. The real estate is there, and it is public real estate, and it could be improved through this district.
As much as I appreciate that dialogue, future intent that's not into the draft agreement and is not in the letter of intent, we can't vote on that. We have to vote what's in here. And what's in here doesn't provide for such parks or recreation. What's in here provides, again, back in that list, one service, and that's the transportation and the landscaping. And again, I don't disagree that this area couldn't use that. That's not the point. I'm just trying to make sure that we get it right. And we have to go by what's in the package. And the package doesn't talk about creating a park and area there, particularly since that military school is going in over there. So, I mean, we have to go what's in the package, and the package doesn't discuss that.
Yeah, and I appreciate those comments very much. And if you look in the service plan itself, under Parks and Recreation, it does reference common area landscaping as a park and rec power specifically.
Exactly, and landscaping is included as part of the transportation in the definition in Title 32.
Right.
And so it's not a park and recreation. Parks and Recreation are defined in Title 32, and landscaping isn't among those.
But I guess Park and Recreation is a very broad statutory category. Park and Recreation in the statute doesn't, for instance, say pickleball courts. It doesn't say volleyball courts. It's a very broadly defined, and that's why in the service plan itself, both in the county template and in the ones that we provide, very clearly call out those common area landscaping type things as part of the park and recreation power. Now, it is part of the transportation as well. You're correct in that, but that is limited to those landscaping improvements that are specific and directly part of transportation. I think a fair reading of the statute would be genuine if or wouldn't be genuine if the only landscaping a district could ever do would be in relation to park and rec, because many of our districts do landscaping completely unaffiliated and not related to transportation whatsoever.
I'm sorry, I just have a hard time calling that a park, but at any rate, the and unfortunately the reference in the statute isn't accurate, so I was looking for the definitions on park and rec anyway. The bottom line is that beyond that, looking at maximum mill levy caps, which mm-hmm. are required to be put into the plan, mm-hmm. those maximum mill levy caps have to include all the overlapping metro and special districts. And so mm-hmm. Cherokee provides water and sanitation here, right? And so the maximum mill levy cap that has to be disclosed in the agreement, I think, is required to include all of the overlapping districts. What is the maximum mill levy that owners will pay, which would include all of the overlapping districts to include Cherokee?
I would beg to differ on that interpretation.
I may be wrong.
You would be the only jurisdiction in the state that says it's a cumulative with all of the overlapping districts. Those are unique to each district, has its own mill levy cap.
Right. But I think the Board of County Commissioners Policy 02272 requires that every proposal included within another district specify a maximum combined mill levy cap. This is within another district, right?
Correct.
I think the Board of County Commissioners require it.
But
am I wrong?
You have that specific on here.
Maybe Ms. Segoe can offer some insights.
Yeah, go ahead.
Again, I'm not an attorney. I'm just trying to interpret what I'm seeing.
I think what
here.
It requires is you'll see later in the service plan that all of the overlapping districts' mill levies are shown to show what the cumulative mill levy would
Cherokee's
be, including
not.
All.
Cherokee's not in that list that I saw. Perhaps I overlooked it.
It may not be, but that may be because it may not overlap this particular property.
The only reason I think it does is...
I'd have to double check, but we listed the ones that were shown according to the assessor's website. So if you go to the assessor's website and you go to a property, it'll show you what districts that particular property's in.
Yeah, I seem to recall that the application for the district said that Cherokee would provide the water and wastewater, and the district was only providing the lines.
That may be true, but it also may be something where you can have an out-of-district, an intergovernmental agreement with a neighboring district, even if you're not in their boundaries, to have them provide. You could be an out-of-district customer. We can double-check to make sure. If we are in within the boundaries of Cherokee, then we will add that back in. To show what the total existing mill levy is for all of the districts that would affect the property.
And that is the question, because it's also not allowed to exceed 60 mills. And if Cherokee, I don't know how high Cherokee is, that's my point.
Right, and that goes back to Mr. Dykstra's point that each district has its own limit.
Okay.
And I certainly would defer to Lori if she has a different opinion, but that's certainly our understanding.
Okay. Ms. Segoe, do you have anything you wanted to add with this discussion? Because like I said, I'm not an attorney. I'm just trying to interpret the title as I read it.
Sure. Can you, I'm trying to follow the discussion, but can you articulate your question for me again?
Well, the very specific question, first of all, is does this qualify under Title 32 as definition of a municipal district? And I can... There are two different references. One's very early on. It's in section 103-1, paragraph 10. I'm sorry, 103, I'll give you a better citation. It's 32-1-101, paragraph, I'm sorry, 102, now 103. 32-1-103, paragraph 10. It's expanded a little bit later, but what it says is that Metropolitan District means a special district that provides the inhabitants two or more of the following services. And they include fire protection, mosquito control, parks and recreation, safety protection, sanitation, solid waste disposal facilities, street improvement, television relay and translation, transportation, or water. And that's expanded later in the thing. It's on, I'll try to get you the specific reference, 32-1-1004, which talks about the additional duties, and it again repeats, but it expands some of the items, such as street improvement. This is where the landscaping is defined as being the street improvement, not part of the parks and recreation piece. And so my question is, this applicant is arguably providing only one of the services listed. Does it even qualify as a metropolitan district?
Ultimately, I think that is a finding that you would need to make. I agree that the list that you have read is how a metro district is defined, that it needs to provide two or more of those services. What we have heard about, at least what I have heard about in the hearing today, would all fall under the definition of street improvements. If you look at 32-1-1004, paragraph 2F, the service street improvement says street improvement through the construction and installation of curbs, gutters, culverts, and other drainage facilities and sidewalks, bridges, parking facilities, paving, lighting, grading, landscaping, and other street improvements. So at least what they've focused on here all would appear to fall within that category. I would certainly, you know, I think the burden is on them to establish that they are providing a second service in that list, and would welcome that opportunity, but I'm not hearing it yet.
And thank you. And I would just reiterate that I agree with what you just read and what your question is, that the landscaping that's in the statute is specific to transportation improvements. The landscaping that we're doing within the project is a common area landscaping, which is within the park and rec powers. And if we really needed to go there, I think we could also say very clearly that we're going to be running water mains and water lines to serve that irrigation that, as was just read and listed, providing water to those areas is not one of the transportation powers. So I think that clearly falls into the category of providing water services as well.
Except that it doesn't, because the application explicitly says Cherokee will provide the water service. All you're providing is the infrastructure.
Right, exactly.
Not providing the water or the water service.
But providing the water infrastructure is part of that statutory water power. And I would solicit or offer that pretty much every master plan development in the county and in the city, the developers don't provide the water service on a daily basis. They don't pump the water. They don't treat the sewage. They have the power to put in the water mains, the sewer mains, and to pay for those, even though they are not going to be the ongoing provider, CSU will be.
Okay, I'll come back to that in a second, but I will also clarify that in the statute, Park and Recreation District is a special district that provides parks or recreational facilities. Now, this isn't a park district, I get that, but it addresses parks or recreational facilities, not landscaping. Going back to the water, though, I have a hard time because the application says somebody else is going to provide that. Providing the infrastructure, I mean, I guess the point is the attorney has said we have some discretion here. Mm-hmm. At least in my interpretation, that doesn't meet the qualification in the statute. So, I mean, I understand and I accept your explanation, but it's not convincing for me.
And I appreciate that and respect and actually really do appreciate the thoroughness that you've looked at it. I guess I can only offer that in my 18 years of doing this, that is very clearly a defensible position, and I am very comfortable with it, and I've given many opinions on that position as well. And I'd also like to clarify, Mr. Fitzpatrick pulled up the assessor's record for the property, and it is not within the Cherokee district, so it'll be an out-of-service type of an arrangement. So we are not subject to their mill levy.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Tangential, I have a concern about the...
I'm supposed to give your name, so it helps with the record.
I would like to ask the applicant about the... retail entities that are going to be participating in this. You mentioned Come and Go. The book here explains that there's 14,400 square feet of existing with another 6,000 coming. Is the 6,000 coming the Come and Go?
Yes.
Okay, so how many retailers are making up the 14,400, and is this enough to be viable to support the district itself?
There are seven retailers in the 14,000-foot existing strip center. Okay. And together, our modeling suggests that, in fact, it is sufficient to support this district. We've looked at what the sales projection would be for the convenience store and what the sales estimates are for the existing retailers. There's an ability to expand the shopping center with up to another 12 to 14,000 feet of retail, and so, but irrespective of any expansion beyond the 14,000 existing retail strip and the planned convenience store, it will support itself. And so imagine that it generates 40,000 or 50,000 a year, probably not enough money to go out and float a bond.
but certainly enough to be able to go to a financial institution with a plan and say, you know, we'd like to put in a $200,000 first phase of improvements and be able to finance using that revenue stream. So we do feel like it's adequate.
As a follow-up, could you go back to the slide where it had the dashed line over the areas so that you could see the retail space? Thank you. So the retail space is kind of under the word add, I think. And so is it voluntary, or once we make this determination, they will all be in, the retail space will all be part of the Metro District, is that correct?
As the property owner, I have the ability to bring my property into the district.
Bring your property into the district, and you're the owner of that retail area?
I am.
Okay, and then the projected potential expansion of the retail space is where?
So there's a little gray stripe that starts at the end of the white-roofed building, and it sort of angles up back towards Space Village. That's an a concrete pad right now, and we're in discussions with a retailer that would occupy 7,000 feet of freestanding building that we're discussing in real time. And then that would be just about straddling that red line as mm-hmm. it crosses there, but there would be one more pad site where you see some trucks parked, mm-hmm. Some long semi-trucks. Imagine that as a Dunkin' Donuts or as a Waffle House or something that would make sense off of a highway exit, and that would be the third retail building.
And on the north end of the middle of the red rectangle, we've got limited project up there. There's a little retail sitting there. Would any of those be participating or not?
Yeah, the building below the word project is the 14,000-foot retail building.
Oh, that is it. Okay.
And that's where the tenants, and they would participate. Okay. And then Come and Go will occupy all of the real estate north of that.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Before, Mr. Curry, you said you had other items?
Not for the moment, Mr. Chair. The only thing I did have was some clarification on the Title 32 statutory definition of water. And it says, which supplies water for domestic and other public and private purposes. So supplies water is the key phrase. And provides all necessary or proper reservoirs, treatment works, and facilities, equipment, and appurtenances thereto.
Okay.
So I just still don't think that the explanation of putting in the water lines qualifies under the definition. So that's the only thing I would have to add. I think I've gotten to the points and the questions that I wanted to get to. It strikes me that this really is about supporting commercial development rather than public improvement. And I just don't think I'm just trying to understand how it meets the definition. So
The reason I'm asking is I wanted to introduce a different perspective.
Yeah, please.
But I didn't want to step on what you wanted to do.
No, please. I am finished and I yield. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your patience.
With that, I'll recognize myself to introduce a different perspective. When I was a kid, I grew up in an area where there was an intersection. And that intersection, one person owned a corner of that. And so they put up a multi-purpose. It was a service station, grocery store, soda fountain, and I worked there for a while when I was a kid. And he called that Cobb's Corner. And so Cobb's Corner became really a focus for some retail activity. And I was thinking about what does a sort of a city do? A city really creates a place where retail, residential, but certainly retail can flourish, and you have to have that concept of a place for retail to occur. And so my feeling as I listen to all this is with the introduction of the irrigation aspect, you're really creating a place that place doesn't currently exist. Am I appropriate?
I believe you are, and I concur. I look at this property. I've been looking at it since the 80s. There is no resources absent this approach to treating open space that CDOT controls. We know CDOT's challenges financially, and you know this is the welcome mat to this very important employer. And these people have important missions. They come and go out of that entrance, and this is a way of recognizing and appreciating what they're doing and letting the passersby on Highway 24 understand the importance of this institution that we call Peterson Air Force Base. You know, as people come into our community and look at this base and consider it for other missions in the future, what we do in the private sector to complement what the government can and can't do, it's going to showcase this property. It's going to make this base. It's going to tangibilize the importance and the commitment that the consumer, the retailer, the property owner has to this economic engine called Peterson. So I think this is a winner. I think this is the right way to do this. This is unusual for a property owner to step up and want to expend resources to improve public right-of-way. There's not a line of people doing this. I think this does make sense, though. Is it in my best interest? Of course. But is there a bigger vision for this entrance? Yes. And this is, I think, the way we get there.
Okay. And so in your conversation with CDOT, does CDOT have any interest of providing irrigated landscaping?
So that question was brought up some vein, but there's no anticipation of any eminent domain here. It would be power needs to be in this document. But actually, CDOT has a provision to grant a license to allow us to landscape. We, of course, would have to maintain it. So I don't think CDOT will foot any of the bill, but they do have a vehicle to allow us to go in and actually treat and maintain it. My first vision was a couple of big planes like Air Force Academy. My wife shot that down quickly and said that was so 70s. So we're not going to do big planes. CDOT had a problem with the planes. You have to be very careful that if a car in right-of-way hits something, that it breaks away. There's a safety component that CDOT has us address. But there is a mechanism, and it's called a license. And Peterson most recently obtained a license from CDOT to treat the very narrow median strip between the gate and where we want to take off. And they put river rock and some xeriscape in. It looks pretty nice. But then it's just loses its importance as you get towards these medians. But yeah, CDOT will grant us the license to allow us to do this.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Yes. Mr. Mastin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a huge fan of doing this. I'll tell you that. I used to be assigned at Peterson, and I've always hated that entrance. There's a lot of things that I think that if you improve that area, we'll get rid of some of the issues that go on in that area as well. Here's my question. Given the concerns that Mr. Curry had, would it be wise to give the applicant a chance to address any of the issues before there's a potential to vote this down and stop it? Would there be a chance to let them address the issues and maybe we can pick it up at another meeting to vote on it again when you can be comfortable with any of the concerns that are out there? I have multiple ideas. I'm retired military, but my job I have now is in the theme entertainment industry. And we do a lot of things for Disney and Universal. And I look at this and my mind's going 1,000 miles a minute about things you could do with this area. The question about a park, and I want to make sure I'm not overstepping anything here, but the reason I ask that if there's a chance to go back and address the issues, would there be a chance to potentially address a park-like area with picnic areas when people are coming off of this exit, when they're using the retail space, something that would satisfy that a little more specifically, the park aspect of what Mr. Curry's brought up?
Respecting your question, we would prefer to actually have you act on this item today. There is a timing component in that we're needing to reach an election in November. So I will tell you that we're taking Commissioner Curry's questions at heart, and I have what I believe to be the finest legal folks on this, and so I'm very comfortable having multiple metropolitan districts experience with them that bringing the water infrastructure into a subdivision, or in this particular case into treating landscaped areas, is compliant and consistent with the statute. I've never built a sanitation station or a treatment facility or some of the other larger components that were described, but it is very common to install water mains, bring in taps, and be able to irrigate and have that considered one of the requirements under this particular service plan. So I respectfully argue that, in fact, we are providing water service and safety and transportation elements to include the landscape. I think this can grow. Learned yesterday the softball fields look like they will come out onto the 16 acres. My company sold the 16 acres to the west to Peterson to protect its gate. And they're going to bring the canine training unit out there, and they're going to bring their ball fields out there. And we want to participate with them if we can to make it act and work as recreation space. We may need to amend our service plan at that point. We would need a revenue stream to support such a greater step. But with all due respect, I'm comfortable that we're within the guidelines and that we've addressed the statutes and we've used the county's template, and we're very comfortable that we meet the requirements of this service plan.
Thank you. Our strong desire when items are brought to us is that we do bring them to a vote, and I think that's what we will be doing here this morning. Any other question? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've tried to review the statute a little bit as best as I can sitting here and to recall how we've treated these issues in the past with metro districts. And I believe, and please, Ramir or Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but El Paso County has frequently and commonly in considering metro district applications, particularly those that set forth within their purposes water and sanitation services, the construction of infrastructure, even if they are not the ultimate service provider, to be an acceptable definition or to fall within that the definition of that purpose. And to help understand that, perhaps I would compare it to street improvements, where metro districts who are formed with a particular purpose of constructing and financing streets and roads, when those roads are ultimately dedicated to the county and they don't own, maintain, or continue to provide service to those roads, we consider that to be one of the, to fall within the definition of that street improvement purpose as one of the required purposes of a metro district. So I apologize for not being better prepared for the question earlier, but upon further reflection and listening to the discussion and reviewing the statute, from my perspective, I am comfortable that constructing and financing the water infrastructure, even if they are not the ultimate service provider or water provider, would fall within that definition of being one of the purposes of this metro district.
Thank you.
May I ask a point of clarification on it?
Certainly, Mr. Curry.
So is there a distinction when the infrastructure is provided for the purpose of providing water to the district, or it's providing the landscaping infrastructure, which is part of the street improvement? I mean, this infrastructure is required for the landscaping, not to provide water to the residents or the businesses, which is, I mean, I would think there's a distinction there. I would qualify it as water, I mean, as landscaping, not provision of water.
I think you could, I think that's an interpretation that you could apply either way, Mr. Curry, and not to sound too wishy-washy or too...
Thank you.
Lawyerly, but I think you could go either way.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from the commission? Ramir, would staff like to present?
Yes, we would like to present, but I would ask if we can may have a 10-minute break.
That sounds like a splendid idea.
I'm sorry.
We'll be back at 10-10.
Session, I think everyone is here.
All right, good morning again, Planning Commission, Mr. Chair. Just want to start off by trying to give some additional additional background or clarification. I don't think either staff, applicants, or attorneys have been more challenged by any question that that Mr. Curry has raised, and we appreciate that because it causes us to go back and rethink why we've done things, and to reevaluate how we've gotten where we are. So I just want to first off explain how we adopted or came to adopt not only the special district policies, but the draft model service plan. Decades ago, there was a special district committee that was formed in connection with or in cooperation with the county attorneys, other district attorneys, and the development community to develop a set of policies and a draft model service plan for use within the county for the formation of districts and also for amendments to existing service plans for existing districts. Those policies helped inform our draft model service plan. And so when you see these service plans, with the exception of specific details such as numbers, the name of the district, that service plan is a verbatim repeat of what was authorized in 2007. And so within the development of that service plan and that language, the county contemplated the formation of districts whose primary purpose may be to finance the design, construction, installation, maintenance, or ongoing provision of service in one of those various categories that Mr. Curry pointed out. And as our county attorney's office has stated, it is common practice for a district to be formed for the purpose of providing the water, wastewater, and or transportation infrastructure improvements, and then turn those improvements over to the respective jurisdictions for ongoing maintenance and for the provision of those services. And so those are sort of limited service special districts. And so consistent with, I think, what the applicant has said in response to those questions, I'd say staff also is in agreement that the provision of the service may extend only to the provision of the infrastructure and to finance those improvements, some of which are public, some of which may wind up being private. So I don't want to be repetitive, but as many of the conditions of approval and the body of the staff report are excerpts or summaries of the special district policies. We looked at the discretionary criteria as well as the mandatory criteria. And the discretionary criteria addressing whether or not adequate services are being provided by other services or other sources, rather, the compatibility of the facility and service standards to those other existing service providers, compliance with the master plan, and compliance with any water quality management plan and whether it's in the best interest of the area to be served. And staff does recommend general consistency with these criteria. Regarding potential for annexation, that wasn't discussed, but I think it is important to note that the property is adjacent to the City of Colorado Springs boundaries, and it is identified as a commercial area on the city's 2020 land use map. The City of Colorado Springs was notified of the service plan, but has not provided any response to date. Should the property be annexed into the city in the future, that would not automatically dissolve the district. The district could still function within the city boundaries and still collect those sales revenues. Are there any questions of staff? I think we've had a very robust discussion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Curry.
This is a quick one, I promise. Back to slide 6, please.
Okay.
And I just want to clarify the service area. The earlier slides, when the applicant's presentation had a rather large rectangle, this does, in fact, constitute the entire service area, correct?
It constitutes the immediate initial service area.
Right.
And I think what you'll see, especially with the next service plan, we'll start with an initial service area, and then additional properties may be annexed or included into the service area. But for the purposes of analyzing the financial feasibility and stability of the plan, we just use those properties that are within the actual service area.
Right. So just to be clear, the rectangle was sort of just a general overview of the general area. Okay.
Right. Okay. And you may have, just for a teachable moment, you may have the district boundaries, but the district itself may have a service area that's outside of the boundaries or that may not require annexation of additional property within the district boundaries. So,
just want to be clear. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions of staff? Thank you.
Good.
Any further input from applicant? Any questions here amongst ourselves? I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Ms. Rainey.
With regards to item number 3, file number ID 17-004, a special district service plan for Peterson Gateway Metropolitan District. I move for approval with new standard resolution page number 37, 6 conditions and 1 notation.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wood.
Mr. Chair, are we going to have...
Beg your pardon?
We generally have discussion on a motion before we vote?
We absolutely have as much discussion as you'd like within some constraints.
Yeah, understood. And may I be recognized for such purpose?
Yes, you are recognized for that purpose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I just want to summarize very quickly. I want to be absolutely clear. I'm very familiar with this area. It's bleak. It's almost a wasteland. I mean, I concur with Commissioner Mastin. This is an area that badly needs these improvements. So please don't misunderstand my concerns relative to the application. The improvements, when realized, should they look even close to what the depictions are, would be a vast improvement in this area. And I have little doubt that would be the case. Where I have my concerns, and I still do, is that special district and metropolitan districts are designed for public improvements. And based on statements in the letter of intent, and if you look at the depiction of this, it is clearly intended, in my personal opinion, and based on my interpretation of the letter of intent and the package, to improve that Space Village retail area, which is underutilized, and again, badly needs these kinds of improvements. The fact that the district will provide both on and off-site road and driveway and those kinds of things The fact that the LOI tells me that the intent is to help create 23,000 feet of commercial space. When I look at that, what this all boils down to me is I see, I believe that the infrastructure, while I have not had similar questions on other districts, when they provided infrastructure for the purpose of providing water, in my interpretation, the infrastructure here is simply to allow for that landscaping. It's not to provide water to the residents. And in my opinion, which the attorney says is within our discretion here, I see those infrastructures going to the irrigation, not to the provision of water. So I question whether or not it meets the criteria of the two or more services. Even if it does, I think the primary intent here is to support commercial development, and it's something that I think that the developers and the landowners ought to be doing rather than doing this through a public improvement district. So for me, I don't think it meets the criteria, and I don't think that it meets the Board of County Commissioners Policy 02272, which discourages the use for those kinds of purposes. And so for those reasons, I think I'm going to not be able to support the motion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Curry. Any other comments?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Rainey.
Well, I am not a fan of metropolitan districts at all, especially when it is involving homes and individual buyers of those homes. I think that puts a burden on them. I feel this is somewhat different. I believe with Mrs. Sago's last ruling, I felt more comfortable in supporting this motion. This is needed in this area. The blight, as you so aptly described, Mr. Curry, is evident. I'm also an Air Force family here and go to Peterson regularly. I think the benefit of starting to bring to life this dead area, even visually, there has to be some legal mechanism to do that. And I think that's what the applicant is trying to do. And I think I'm going to support it.
Thank you. Any other comments? Hearing none, then with respect to item number three, we have a motion on the floor, which was moved for approval by Ms. Rainey and seconded by Mr. Wood. And so I'll call the roll. Ms. Rainey?
Aye.
Mr. Curry?
No.
Mr. Mastin?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
No.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. And so we have 4 in favor and 2 opposed. The motion is approved. Thank you. And are we ready to move on to the next regular item, number 4, which is ID-17-001, Special District Service Plan for Meadowbrook Crossing Metropolitan District with 9 conditions and 1 notation.
Again, good morning, Planning Commission, Mr. Chair. Ramir Fitzpatrick with Planning and Community Development. I'm here to present the, Peterson Gateway Metropolitan Service. We just voted on that. This is the
Meadowbrook
Crossing.
Yeah, we just finished that one. Don't take us back through that one, please, Ramir.
No, we'll get away from that. We have the applicant here, Mr. Mienka, representing the existing Meadowbrook Crossing Metropolitan District, here to describe the proposed amendments to their service plan.
Thank you, Ramir and Commissioners. Danny Mienka again on Meadowbrook Crossing Metropolitan District. A bit of background on this requested amendment to the service plan. After we were approved for our initial service plan and costs were more made more accurate through budgeting, it was established that we were going to need to spend very significant resources to channelize Sand Creek. Also in an effort to try to get to a connection between some open space that this plan provides to the residents from the development and the potential need to cross Sand Creek with a bridge, we determined that our existing debt service mill levy was just going to be inadequate. And so we have collaborated with Richmond Homes, who's the builder for half of the subdivision. Century Communities will be the builder for the other half of the subdivision. And we did multiple things to address the cost inefficiencies and the economics of the subdivision. The first thing we did is we reduced the lot size. We took the original plan back through this body and through the board, and we went to an RS-5000 kept the lots at 50 foot and redesigned the subdivision in order to get more density. What that also meant was we were going to get smaller first-time home buyers. So the real basis for needing to generate more debt service mill levy is that we thought that our channel improvements would be about $750,000. They're now $1.2 million. So we are doing a number of things with this plan. We are dedicating 6.12 acres for Sand Creek. We're improving at a cost of $1.2 million this off-site public improvement that doesn't benefit the residents, but is a function or a requirement of making the balance of the land usable and sellable. And there's two drop structures and lots of riprap, and it's just expensive. There's lots of ways to do this. You can just drive all that into your lot development costs, and then instead of a $65,000 or $70,000 lot, you have an $80,000 lot. But an $80,000 lot doesn't work for a first-time home buyer. It puts that home above $400,000. So met with the builder, and the builder is on board and in agreement with raising our debt service mill levy and adding some prospective impact fees if necessary in order to balance the economics and to get the home price to the home buyer in line with the market. So in addition to the land for Sand Creek, 6.12 acres and its development costs, we're dedicating 1.73 acres of open space, and we're also dedicating 1.5 acres of right-of-way for the future expansion of Meadowbrook Parkway. This is a wish list for El Paso County. From the developers in the area, nobody really wants to see the road go through. It's an expensive road connection, but I think Peterson wants to see it. El Paso County wants to see this connection of Meadowbrook extend to Peterson. And in order to enable that, in order to support the county's larger transportation goals, we dedicated 1.5 acres for Meadowbrook Parkway. So in addition to getting consent and cooperation from the builder, we also brought in two additional pieces of property that I own into the district to add bonding capacity for this. These are commercial pieces. There's 4.6 acres across the street from Meadowbrook Crossing, the development, and then on the other side of Highway 24 is another 4.4 acres. So I am voluntarily taking additional properties that I have and bringing them into the district, and have brought them into the district's boundary, again, to give it financial capacity to pay for these off-site public improvements. I think that in combination with the additional debt service mill levy will enable us to keep this as an affordable development. And so we just have a disproportionate amount of off-site public improvements for a 114-lot subdivision. If we were building 300 or 400 homes, a little bit different. That's not your fault. That's not my fault. It's just we looked at the land use. This is the maximum density we can get, and we're shouldering a good amount of improvements that we're going to hand off to the county, which will be good for future development downstream, and we're keeping the price point for the customer in balance. Now,
Commissioner Rainey, I understand that districts are something that concerns you from a homeowner standpoint, and of course it is. It's just as important for us to understand the cost for that home buyer, and we look at this subdivision, and the builder looks at this subdivision as a first-time home buyer move, and so you can either put the gate up and keep them out with costs, or you can spread these costs over time. And there's no perfect answer, but we think that we've struck the right balance at there's going to be additional taxation on their real property taxes. But as a practical matter, given the location of this development and what we generally understand in this industry about first home time home buyers, they're in that home 3 to 5, maybe as many as 7 years, and then they're stepping up and they're relocating, being transferred to a different military installation, or they're having children, they're moving up and they're into the first time move up. So I think these are effective tools. I think that's why they exist, and it's a matter of trying to balance the economics over time, and we think that the consumer, who will be fully disclosed and understand the estimated tax implications of this, you know, would rather take the $4,000 or $5,000 that they might experience in taxes over 5 or 7 years and be able to put furniture in the house, maybe be able to put a third car garage on in some instances, or finishes in a basement. That is the basis for our amendment. There is a nexus to these other properties. We'll be running utilities from one side of 24, under 24, and through my other property, so that will tie into Meadowbrook's utilities for Cherokee. And so the bottom line is, you know, we think we've balanced the cost with this approach and maintained a new home price that will be receptive to the market. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Curry.
Thank you. When this came before us in September of last year, I voted against it. It was the 3 votes against it, but I voted against it primarily because I had concern about the criteria of being able to service the debt, because in my comments at the time, the math didn't add up. And very specifically, I commented that the proposed amount was one-third of what was required to service the debt that you projected. And the answer that I got at the time, and these are in the notes, the official record is the minutes, but from the notes, I'll quote, and the I said the debt limit would require $3,000 per unit, not the $1,100 that was proposed. The answer was, the district will not provide the infrastructure. The developer will provide the infrastructure subject to a reimbursement agreement. And if that reimbursement can't be paid, then the risk is on the developer. So why is the risk now on the district?
The risk isn't on the district. The district, in collaboration and agreement with its builder who buys the lots from the developer, is going to take on a larger share of the public improvement. So we're spending almost $5 million on this, on 114 lots. That's a big per lot number. And so this district, while it might have a debt capacity that's much higher in its service plan, it's only going to be able to recover some of that. We think that's probably on the order of $1.5 to $2 million is what the district will be able to recover. But of the $5 million, maybe 4 of it would all be eligible public improvements. So the district is not going to be able to recover under the reimbursement agreement anything close to the actual public improvements. But there's a limit to what you can allocate to the homeowner or to the lot and through taxes. And so don't be confused. We'll have many more dollars of public improvements than could be recovered. If you go out and put a bond in place, there's interest carry, and so the amount of debt that is serviced will be higher than the amount of public improvements that can be recovered. But that's just a math in terms of issuing a bond and paying it back over 20 years. But we are not going to be close to recovering the amount of public improvements we're putting in this subdivision.
Two other quick questions. One, the staff report indicates that there's not a multi-district configuration. Is this particular district within the Cherokee Water District as well?
It is. It will be served by Cherokee Metropolitan District.
Yeah, but I mean, go back to the discussion we had on the previous one. Is it within it? Because I didn't see the maximum cap levy.
Yes.
That included Cherokee.
In the last one.
In this one either.
I believe it is in there.
Okay. Then I may have overlooked it.
Yeah, I believe it is in the Cherokee District.
The last question I have for you then is that the staff report indicates that the district does not anticipate entering into any IGAs, but don't you have to with Cherokee?
No, we are obliged to relocate a pretty large sewer line for Cherokee that is currently running through where the subdivision will produce lots. And then we will install all of the infrastructure for the distribution of the water and wastewater. Right. Then we'll dedicate that to Cherokee, but not through an intergovernmental agreement. It's through a plan set that we've designed, they've approved, and then it'll happen vis-a-vis a deed, ultimately.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Rainey.
Two questions, or a question and a comment. The first question is, you mentioned that you dedicated other lands into this district. How is that representative to the outlined area of the district in the slide? Is that outside that, or is it included in that area?
It's all included within that red.
Okay, and so where was the original Metro District line?
So I'd like to
be able to visualize the difference.
Okay. In other words, the new parcels that we brought in?
Yes. Can you just show with the arrow on the cursor?
I can. Do I have a pointer?
Just use the mouse.
Oh, okay. So this RR5 right here is owned by my company and is now in the district. And then this lot 7, Hillcrest Acres, right here is now brought within the district.
Okay, so those are outside the boundaries that are highlighted there.
Correct. And that's the development area here.
Okay, and I understand that you're saying that the homeowner will be fully disclosed of the additional tax burden that they'll be carrying, but my biggest problem is they have a more difficult time selling their home because a future home buyer is going to compare square feet and homes available, and they're going to see what the cost is that they're going to have to bear on in a metro district versus a non-metro district, and they're going to try to buy outside of a metro district. So the first homeowner here is going to have a more difficult time selling their home, and they, like you rightly said, are probably going to be military and being forced to move with a PC, and so how are they going to be able to sell if there's a disadvantage? That's my biggest concern with the Metro District.
So this morning, you approved the final plat for Hannah Ridge filing number 3. Mm-hmm. And that is a subdivision that I formed many years ago, and it has a Metro District as well. I don't know of another development within 3 or 4 miles of this that doesn't have a district. It's really the only way to within, I think, our demographic in Colorado Springs. We're not a $400,000 per price per home. We're a $300,000, and so from a development perspective, these districts are effective ways to get the cost to meet the demographic price points of our marketplace. And so a homeowner coming out of Meadowbrook Crossing is going to experience in almost any other subdivision that I'm aware of along the Mark Sheffel Corridor or the Bowers Corridor, and that's Stetson Hills and Indigo Ranch and Banning Lewis and down south in Lorson Ranch. They're all imposed with districts. So we don't see that we're creating a competitive disadvantage in any way for our home buyer. They won't go to another subdivision without a district, in my opinion.
Any other questions? Yes, Mr. Curry.
Sorry, one quick one just for clarification. I'm talking about these, it piggybacks on the two properties issue. The report indicates that the amended financial plan does not rely on revenues from the two added properties to service the debt. Can you clarify what that means? I mean, they are contributing, correct?
They're going to contribute. They're just not reliant upon them. So I'm voluntarily adding additional bonding capacity from the other two parcels because there is, in my opinion, a nexus that is supporting this development. In the case of the 4 acres on the north side of Highway 24, we're actually cutting the earth out and using that to balance the site and balance the creek. In the case of the property, the 4 acres on the other side of 24, there's no utilities in Hillcrest. You all reviewed the auto recycling plan at one point, and it broke from the weight of cost. But we intend on using our 2 4-acre parcels to allow easements to bring a sewer line under 24, and that sewer line will tie into Meadowbrook Crossing. So I believe there's a nexus, and so I thought carefully about taking those additional properties, taxing myself to add capacity to cover this additional cost burden.
Yeah, I guess, and again, I want to be clear. In this particular case, I don't have any question about the services. I'm confident that the services meet the definitions here. I'm not questioning that part.
Thank you.
My question goes back to the financing, the non-reliance on the revenues. It sounds like the statement just sounds like they're not included in the calculations relative to the debt ceiling, that the two properties just simply made it bigger so you could get more debt. I know that's probably not the intent, but could you clarify what that means? Does the revenue from these two properties is counted as additional revenue relative to financing these improvements, correct?
It will be, yes.
But not reliant on. Can you just clarify what that statement means?
Well, reliant means it won't work without it. And in the case of auxiliary or additional revenue, it's enabling. So I would describe one as enabling and one as reliant, which is different.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any other questions of the applicant? Ramir?
I assume we don't need to necessarily go over the specifics of the proposed amendments.
Why don't you go through it a little more finely, because okay. We have 3 members on the commission who have not gone through a special district service plan before.
Good idea. So the district or the service plan was originally approved to authorize a maximum debt limit of $10 million. It doesn't mean that's exactly what's going to be spent, but that's the maximum amount of debt that can be incurred. As the developer stated in the letter of intent and also summarized in the staff report, I believe original anticipated costs were 2 point something million, and then the final cost wind up being over $4 million, which, as Danny stated, is probably more attuned to $5 million after you start adding in those additional costs. The maximum approved debt mill levy was 40 mills, and that included a maximum of 35 mil for debt service and 5 mil for operational and maintenance services. They're requesting to increase or amend the maximum debt mill levy to 60 mills, which is the highest that they can go in accordance with the special district policies. They're increasing or proposing an increase of the debt service mill levy to 50 mil from 35 and adding an additional 5 mil for operations and maintenance purposes. Obviously, if there's more there's some open space and recreational facilities that are going to be built, which are going to require additional maintenance and operational services. Additional amendments include the imposition of additional fees due at the time of sale of the property. So there will be a $2,500 builder fee, which will be due to the district at the time of sale from the developer to the builder. So the builder will pay a $2,500 fee to the district at the time of sale, time of closing of the sale. An additional $1,750 homeowner fee would be imposed on the homeowner due to the district at the time of sale of the property from the builder to the homeowner, and then a $500 annual homeowner fee to the district.
And these are per lot fees?
These are per lot fees.
Thank you.
Correct. This will be a conventional representative district, which means members within the property owners within the district will have the ability to participate in the governance of the special district and participate in board membership as well. Again, the purposes of the district include design and construction, financing of infrastructure improvements, including water, wastewater, street improvements, safety protection, drainage facilities, and park and recreational facilities, and also include the maintenance of those recreation facilities, mosquito control, and covenant enforcement and design review. Again, the conditions of approval, as stated, are somewhat our standard. We have our required findings of the sufficient and existing and projected need, whether or not the existing service is adequate for the present and projected needs, whether or not the district is able to provide economical and sufficient service, and the financial ability to discharge that proposed indebtedness, as well as those discretionary findings. And staff did make a recommendation that based on the increased cost of those drainage and park and recreational facilities, which include construction and maintenance and operations, that staff felt that those findings could be met based off of a review of the financial analysis and the financial plan summary. Are there any specific questions of staff regarding this?
I have one question.
Okay.
You talk about the residents per lot being involved in the governance of the special district. How will the commercial districts factor into that governance? In other words, you're having 144 homeowners, or probably, and then you have also commercial involved in the same district. How will voting and all that kind of stuff be dealt with?
And that's a good question. I think that the way that it's set up is you would have a certain percentage that's earmarked per the residential acreage included within the district boundaries, and then a certain amount for the commercial. You'd have to have the ability to have at least one of the commercial owners to take part in the board or run for the board. I don't know that it's mandatory that you have one of those members, but I think what it is that it's maybe a limit on the number that comes from, or the percentage that may come from one of those groups or categories, so you don't have a disproportionate amount of the commercial property owners within the district, controlling the district. I think it has to be balanced, but Danny is probably more eloquent in presenting that answer.
But my frame of reference is I've been involved in homeowners associations. And
God bless you.
Well, they work.
They work, and they can be difficult.
But I was wondering how the voting structure would be set up.
So this is an opportunity to avoid the traditional HOA. Most builders today that we're working with don't want to be handed off an HOA on a small subdivision. So what the district will do is engage a corporation that will have a manager for the subdivision to enforce covenants. And that annual fee is to essentially be in lieu of an HOA fee, and that will pay for a management company to service the trash and enforce the covenants and the CC&Rs, essentially, and to maintain the integrity of the subdivision. That's what it's intended for.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
My question for clarification relative, again, I'm going back to the Board of County Commissioners policy from 2007-02-272. Talks about the maximum combined mill levies. And looking in the application, it doesn't, in fact, list Cherokee, except for fire protection. It doesn't list the water, but it does list the fire. But The question that I have is one for clarification, is that the Board of County Commissioner policy limits to 60 mills and can allow as much as 15 more for fire if the district doesn't provide it. So this is 60. Cherokee, unfortunately, is 15.286, which puts it above that limit. Is that allowable?
Well, what it's saying is that it will only allow that district to incur up to 60, but then you may have, so that 60 would be in addition to whatever other mill levies are already in place.
Except that the definition says that's not true. The definition says, and I quote, maximum combined mill levy cap. The maximum combined Gallagher adjusted ad valorem mill levy the district or combination of districts which are part of a consolidated service plan may certify against any property.
Okay.
That's so, combination of
so,
districts.
So what that
Am I
means
misreading
is,
it?
So if you remember back a year ago when we heard this, the original Meadowbrook Crossing Metro mm-hmm. District, we mm-hmm. also had a service plan for the Sands Metropolitan mm-hmm. District, which was, it had a master service, a master
yes.
district, and then three subordinate districts.
Yes.
So in that, so those are the combined district structures. And so in that instance, property within the Sands is subject to two different Sands metropolitan districts.
Right.
And so the combined mill levy within the Sands district that it can impose can exceed 60. And so it's specific to what's within the district. And so the maximum combined mill levy in this instance is the 60 mills here, which is made up of your debt service mill levy and your operations mill levy, and then sometimes there might be another special mill levy that the board may approve in connection with those.
All right, thank
okay.
you.
I believe Elizabeth Nykamp has a clarification she wants to make.
Thank you, Elizabeth Nykamp, Planning and Community Development Engineering Department. I just wanted to clarify that this site's drainage improvements are not off-site. They are on-site. They will be publicly owned and maintained in the future, but they are on-site. We are not imposing any off-site improvements necessary. So it's just a tiny thing that really doesn't affect what you're doing, but I don't want you to think that the team is imposing off-site in infrastructure requirements for this development. They're all within his current ownership, his current property ownership.
See, so if I'm understanding that correctly, they're picking up more of a burden than we would often find.
No.
They're not.
No. So if we look at that semi-rectangle, it includes the portion of the creek that they will be required to improve. So when an engineer thinks of off-site improvements, or even a developer thinks of off-site improvements, you are imposing an improvement outside of this property. So let's say I needed a drop structure right up here, right outside of his property. That would be considered an off-site improvement. In this case, if I'm not mistaken, all of the improvements that the engineering department is requiring for this site are within his current property boundary. Yes, they will become ownership and maintenance of the county. However, it's not an off-site improvement. So let's say Banning Lewis Ranch, because we all know how big and huge that is. So if somebody there on Banning Lewis Ranch wanted to build a 112-acre subdivision, but the road or the drainage wasn't adequate to get there, or get the drainage from that site to the creek, they might have to do an improvement off-site to get a road. So in this example, if this road right here wasn't there yet, and we had Mr. Mianka develop that road and construct that road, that would be considered an off-site improvement. If we had him do anything in the creek up here, then that would be considered an off-site improvement. However, I believe the only requirements we have for him are within this boundary. So it's moot to the service district plan and everything that you're talking about today. However, it's not moot to me, because I don't want my team imposing off-site improvements when I don't know about it. So I don't think there's off-site improvements that are required. So it's just so you understand, all the improvements he has to do to the creek are because he's adjacent to the creek. His development is adjacent to the creek, and he owns that section of the creek today. So I think Mr. Mianka can clarify or confirm that. But I don't believe we have any off-site improvements. But yes, the county will be owning and maintaining most of those improvements.
Okay.
When completed.
Thank you, Elizabeth, and I did. I misspoke and characterized it as an off-site improvement, which we don't like being imposed upon us. Having said that, in my mind, we're improving it to dedicate it to the county for the benefit of the county, and at that point, it will be off-site. But technically, it won't be off-site until we have made that such dedication. So I appreciate the clarification, and Elizabeth is correct. And let me then, since you've opened the door, say that one of the uses that we contemplated for this property because of its proximity to the Claremont Business Park was to do at one point a large tractor supply. And they needed buildings that we could build on the property that was outside the floodplain, and they needed lots of yard space for outside storage, which could be in the floodplain, and in that case we would not have spent anything to channelize because we wouldn't be required to. We would have platted it as a separate tract, used it as outside storage. So we chose to do residential. That's requiring that we do this channelization. It will ultimately be an off-site component to the Sand Creek system that the county will own after we dedicate it. But there's an example of where we're improving the creek at our own from our own motivation, but there could be a use of this piece of property that would not get the creek improved. And so I apologize for characterizing it as an off-site, but I think it is moot relative to your consideration today.
Thank you.
Any questions at this point in time for Ramir? Go ahead. Are you finished?
I yes. thought we interrupted you as you were going through.
No, and I think I had, just for the record, identified that staff recommends that that the proposed service plan amendment is consistent with those discretionary and required findings.
Okay. I have a question for you then. Mr. Manicki identified that he's doing things that he would probably prefer not to have to do, but he's doing it because if he's going to put residential property in there, it has to be done. So I think without putting words in his mouth, he was saying, I'm trying to get residential property where I think there's a need for residential property, and it's going to be hard to do. Does staff share that perspective, that this is?
And absolutely. Whenever we look at the rezoning of property in the early stages of development review, you know, we ask ourselves the questions, not only is this appropriate at this location, but how sustainable is it going to be? In this instance, Mr. Mienka had some of the underlying land use approvals that were underway and in process in connection with the original service plan. The service plan is one of the only, if not the only, land use application that requires some type of market analysis and feasibility study and absorption study. And I'm sure there's a lot more that is generated that we don't see, but there's an assumption that the market can sustain this at that location. But I think, as he said, it's only able to sustain lots or development within a certain price point and price range. So yes, we do look at that. But unfortunately, the service plan is the time when we really get to dig deep into it, because we actually have those submittal requirements that open up the door for our analysis and our review.
Thank you. Any other questions for staff? Yes, Mr. Curry.
Yeah, thanks. Just for clarification, I just want to make sure I understand what's part of the amendment. The amendment seeks an increase in the mill levy cap from 40 to 60. Can you go to that next slide? Because that's my question. Now, are these fees also new?
Yes.
Okay, so in addition to increasing the mill levy by 50% from 40 to 60, we're now also imposing a one-time $1,750 fee and then an annual $500 fee on the homeowner.
Right.
So the first year, the homeowner is going to pay $2,250, and then every year after that, they're going to pay $500. Okay. And that's over and above the mill levy.
Correct. Now, the $500 fee, and Mr. Mianka can give a head nod or conclusion, that would be in place of annual homeowner HOA dues. So you're replacing the HOA dues with just the district fees. So it's sort of, whereas the initial service plan contemplated perhaps an HOA that would not have included those costs or established those costs, the new service plan with district responsibilities is establishing that.
Actually, I think I recall that the covenant enforcement was part of the original plan. I don't think that's new. Just the fee is.
You may be correct.
They could also have done this through a mill levy, right? Five mill levy to do the
correct
HOA, but I'm. But the bottom line is these are all new fees.
Mm-hmm. And why don't I allow Mr. Mianka to sort of describe how this fits in with the overall structure and how those fees are actually received by the property owner over time.
Right, and if you could clarify that the $500, is that for the covenant enforcement?
It is. Okay. It is. And the original service plan did contemplate that the district could be the enforcement mechanism for the covenants, conditions, and restrictions. The $500, after locating our builder, it was established that they had no interest in running an HOA. And so the district made sense to be the mechanism for that. These impact fees are being authorized by vis-a-vis this amended service plan, if you so approve it, and the board does. It doesn't make them mandatory. It is a matter of once we have finalized our cost and once we decide on the feasibility of building a zero-scape dog park and children's recreational center on that 1.7 acres, we have a bridge to cross Sand Creek is $250,000. Just the width of Sand Creek will require the most affordable bridge we've been able to establish is about $250,000. So the idea was that these impact fees may support the ability to reach that park and to develop that dog park across the channel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Rainey.
The thing I struggle with the most, because this is an amendment to an existing metro district, so the metro district stands, is why in 1 year do you need 50% more money? I mean, I know you've described, you know, we might have to do this, we might have to do, but didn't you know these things a year ago?
No, that's really why. The service plans take a time and they require a district court vote. And so oftentimes you're putting them in place well before you actually understand your final design and therefore your costs. So we're actually moving earth right now. But this project started 36 months ago. And so through the design, engineering plan, and profiles, only then can we actually capture what the actual cost is. We also took the channel to the Army Corps of Engineers with a CLOMER application. That's a 9-month process, start to finish. And the CLOMER application required a certain level of design that allowed us to understand our true costs. And our true costs were just extraordinarily higher than what we had originally anticipated. So it gets developed in real time. Thank you.
Any other questions for either the applicant or staff? I see nobody in the audience other than the two of them, so we can have a conversation, and our chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I am really concerned about these fees added on, the addition in the mill levy, and the ability for a first-time homeowner who makes maybe $35,000 a year to be able to afford this. I know you believe that they can. You say that they don't have any other option but to be in a district like this. They might drive farther than you think. But, I mean, the homeowners alone, the annual fee for that is four times what I pay in my
in my neighborhood. I'm really struggling with imposing this on a first-time home buyer and have them really be able to afford it. And I think it's going to hamper their ability to sell their home. So I'm struggling with that.
Any other comments? Mr. Curry.
Yeah, I was concerned when this first came to us about the ability to service the debt. Said so at the time, that the mill levy would have to be triple what it was to service the debt, because I looked at the spreadsheets and the math. And I knew at the time that there wouldn't be enough money for this. Seems like that was proven true. The original plan, we may be quibbling, but I think it included a covenant enforcement, because I was concerned about that at the time. And now we're being asked to pay for that. So, I mean, we're being asked now to do precisely what I predicted would happen before, that we're being asked to increase the mill levy, and now they're adding fees to pay for things. One of our mandatory criteria is the ability to service the debt and finance it. I was concerned about it at the time. I remain concerned about it. I just don't think they have it. And I don't see any reason to believe that we're not going to be back here again in the future with a similar question. So I'm struggling. Thank you.
Any other comments? I would like to make one. It's been my observation that metropolitan areas, the Colorado Springs metropolitan area, is a little bit unique, because if you look elsewhere in the country, you'll tend to have a city, and then surrounding that city, you'll tend to have bedroom communities that crop up. And those bedroom communities have their own government. Colorado Springs is almost unique in that respect. We don't have any of those bedroom communities. Even Black Forest, while they have their own desires as to what they want done, they refuse to incorporate. And so they are part of El Paso County. And so we have a lot of pressure around here, because we have people moving into the area. It's a nice area to be in, and there's jobs. And with Peterson Air Force Base, there's jobs. And people want homes, and people want commercial places. So in essence, what has happened as a matter of fact is that special districts have cropped up to assume the role that typically a city would assume. So Colorado Springs doesn't want to develop Banning Lewis Ranch, because they don't like to develop residential, because it's more expensive to develop residential versus the fees you get, particularly since there's a cultural disposition, I guess is better, that nobody wants to pay property taxes. For example, when I look at my property tax view, the amount of money, and I'm in the city, the amount of money I pay to the city for property tax is roughly the same as I pay for the library district, which is weird. I can't think of any other way of saying it. But the politics in this area has been to really make it tough to get growth with people and figure out how to house them without doing special districts in the county. So the question is are we making it too difficult for people to afford? Well, I don't think that's my judgment to be made. I need to trust the entrepreneurs to figure that out, because in the final analysis, they're the ones that are assuming that risk. Because if they can't make it work, in the long haul, they're going to be penalized for that. So that's just my observation, and I'm not trying to lecture. I'm just trying to share my perspective.
Mr. Chair, just one perspective on that. The district itself is already in place, so, I mean, that's not what we're here for. And like I said before, I don't have any issues at all with the fact that they're providing all the services they're supposed to be. We're being asked to approve fee increases. The district is already in place, so, I mean, that's not the, I don't think that's the issue before us today. I think the thing we have to ask ourselves is whether the fee increase is appropriate with the fees and the mill levy increase. And whether or not it meets the criteria to include their financial ability to discharge those proposed indebtedness. So I think that's what we really need to focus on, is not the district itself, but this increase. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. The district does exist on paper, and it has been approved. But that doesn't mean it will necessarily be built as residential if it's not cost-effective to do that.
Yeah,
we might have a big tractor supply place sitting there, and people won't be able to find a place to live. So, these all work together. So,
agree.
I'm ready to hear a motion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Curry.
Let's see if I can find my little piece of paper here. Oh, here we go. I got it. I'm just going to put this on so we can get moving. That's all. As regards agenda item number 4, file number ID-17-001, Special District Service Plan Amendment for Meadowbrook Crossing Metropolitan District with 9 conditions and 1 notation, I move for denial in accordance with the standard resolution on page 38, specifically citing inability to financially discharge the proposed indebtedness.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Rainey seconds the motion. So we have a motion on the floor for item 4, ID 717-001, Special District Service Plan, Meadowbrook Crossing, Metropolitan District, 9 conditions, 1 notation, and the motion is for denial. And then there's a motion and a second. And any other discussion? Then we'll go through and hear the vote. Get the right sheet of paper here. Ms. Rainey?
Aye.
Now an aye is for denial.
Correct.
Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Mastin?
Nay.
Mr. Smith?
Nay.
Mr. Wood?
Nay.
And the chair votes nay. So the motion to deny fails. So what I really need is a motion for approval so we can pick up the conditions and the notation. So, Mr. Mastin, would you make that motion?
Make sure I do this correctly. Make a motion for approval?
Yes.
Read the whole thing again?
You can, it's not necessary. We've got it in the record.
I'll just make the motion for approval then, Mr. Chair.
Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Smith? So we have a motion and a second, and any further discussion? None, we'll take a vote. This time, an aye is for approval. Ms. Craig, would you like to help us?
Morning, all. Sorry I'm late. Does that motion include the conditions and notations?
Yes. So the motion we're voting on is, just to clarify, as Craig correctly identified, I hadn't done that. It's agenda item 4, ID 17-001, Special District Service Plan Amendment for Meadowbrook Crossing Metropolitan District with 9 conditions and 1 notation for approval per page 37. So we got that all taken care of. And the second still stands. So we'll go through the vote. Ms. Rainey?
Aye.
Mr. Curry?
No.
Mr. Mastin?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Wood?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. So the motion to approve is passed with two...
No, one.
One no, I guess. Mm-hmm. All right. And that concludes the items. Thank you all. Anything else we need to deal with before we go?